Thank you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Haunted Playground right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. We're at liveparanormal.com, hauntedplayground.com, and syndicated around the world, iHeartRadio.com, Blog Talk Radio, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podmatic, Podbean, anything pretty much you can envision, you will find Live Paranormal. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 27-year talk radio host. I'm a paranormal survivor. And this is Haunted Playground now in its 11th year on the radio, and so happy to be here. Every week on the show, I gather the folks that I believe are the brightest and loveliest and most beautiful minds and hearts and souls in both the spiritual and paranormal communities, and we talk about everything from life after death to is there a Loch Ness monster in your swimming pool. My guest today is fabulously amazing part of the paranormal community. I recently had the privilege of filming a documentary film with him in Joshua Tree, along with Rick McCallum, who's been here, my dear friend Andrea Perrin. Last week we had on Jay Blumke and our director, Michael Mazzola, and it's wonderful to have the wonderful Tony Rathman here. Thank you so much, my friend. I'm honored. I loved meeting you, and I'm honored to have you here on the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So since it's your first time on one of my shows, tell my listeners a little bit about how the paranormal grabbed you. Like, what was it about the paranormal that, and what still holds you in the community today?
You know, 12 years ago, I was a complete skeptic. I didn't believe in anything within the paranormal. And when I married my wife, I noticed that she had a real interest in it. And, you know, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, the TV shows started coming out, and she kept saying to me, you have to watch this. Come and watch this with me. So I'd sit down for about 3 minutes, and then I'd look at her, and I would say, this isn't real. This is just television. This is just for an audience. And, you know, part of that was because of my upbringing. My father was a physics, chemistry, and physical science instructor. So when I was growing up, every question I asked was always science-based. And, of course, the paranormal falls outside of science. That's why it's called paranormal, above and beyond normal. Well, then one Valentine's Day, she came up to me and she said, I want to do something different this year. I said, okay, what do you want to do? She said, I want to go ghost hunting. And I was like, oh, kidding me, because I didn't believe in it. And so I had two choices. I could either take her investigating, or I could have her mad at me until next Valentine's Day. So I said, okay, we'll do this. Well, I didn't know anything about it. I had to research, you know, even where a place that was considered to be haunted. Luckily, I found one here right in downtown Phoenix and thought, okay, I'm done. Then I looked a little bit deeper, and I'm like, wait a minute, they're using equipment. So I went out, bought her a night vision camera, digital recorder, and an EMF meter. Nothing spectacular, relatively low cost, because I figured it would sit in the closet for the next 5 years till we threw it away. But I took her, and we spent the entire weekend. I played along. I investigated with her. We did audio recording, video recording, and, of course, used the EMF. But it wasn't until she got the stuff home that I was absolutely just blown away. We had voices on the recorder. We had images and photographs that weren't there when we took them. And we had images in the video that weren't there when we took them. So I spent the next 2 months trying to debunk it. I'm like, there's got to be a reasonable rational explanation for what she was showing me. Well, I couldn't find one. So then finally I said, okay, if I can't dismiss this, let's go back and see what happens if we try again. So we did. And of course, we got even more. And it just kept growing and growing. I think we investigated that particular hotel over 50 times. And that's
wow.
what started it all. Right.
Wow, that's beautiful. And when was the last time you were there?
The last time we were there was probably about a year ago. We've moved on past that place, even though it's absolutely fantastic as far as captures. The paranormal activity there is incredible. But of course, we moved on. We moved from hotels to other places, other known historically haunted places throughout the U.S. And we've been all over the U.S. And then last year or a year and a half ago, prior to COVID, we started doing international properties. We've been in Japan. We've been in the Philippines. The Diplomat Hotel in the Philippines was probably the most active location we've done to date and was just off the charts incredible.
That's so awesome. That's so fantastic. Where is your dream place in the whole – I know this is a really plain question probably everybody asks, but where is your dream place in the whole world?
Well, that's hard to narrow down, but a couple of them that come to my mind. We have not yet been to Waverly Hills, so that's one of them. The Suicide Forest in Japan is another one.
Sure. Oh, bet, yeah.
So many stories. You know, the popularity with paranormal and locations becoming open to investigators, getting a chance to investigate there, has spread all over the country. And, you know, you start talking about international locations. I mean, the castles in Europe, Lepp Castle, there's just so many of them. And Europe is a big one for us because you're not talking 200, 300 years of history. You're talking thousands of years of history. And, you know, I know you have connections with Rick, and Rick's been on your show. He's a real
sure.
Great information giver about locations in Europe, especially Scotland. And, you know, he's always talking to me saying, you got to come over, you got to come over. So that is definitely a bucket list for us.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, right. That's his thing, right? It's to go to the UK and do things.
Absolutely. He loves it.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically with Scotland. Plus he's got fantastic connections to a team over there, which he says just does fantastic work. So I don't blame him for wanting to go there to do it.
So was it an adjustment, Tony, to your whole emotional and spiritual ideology when you had to suddenly open up and accept that all this stuff that you thought was kind of hooey was real, and you had the scientific evidence that would have even made Dad proud?
Yeah. In fact, when I first started this, my father, some of the toughest questions I've ever had to answer came from my own father. And yes, it changed me in ways I can't even explain. To know that the spirit survives death, or consciousness, or whatever term you want to apply to that energy. Let's just call it consciousness. It does survive death. And we know that through the hundreds of tests we've done, from EVPs to spirit boxes. We build our own spirit boxes now. And we've done that for probably, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years. But to be able to get that kind of communication, you know you are dealing with an intelligent entity or intelligence, conscious intelligence. We're not talking about residual hauntings. You can get answers to questions. And some of the things we've done and tested just absolutely blew me away. I mean, I'm talking about not even asking a question, but writing a word on a piece of paper, holding that piece of paper up, and they will read it, coming through either an EVP or a spirit box. Just incredible stuff that shows intelligence of that consciousness.
Yeah. it's amazing, right? So my dad was an engineer, an electrical engineer, and very atheist, a lapsed Catholic, right? The strongest kind of atheist, the lapsed Catholic.
Right.
And, right, I used to always say he liked robots better than people, right? Everything with him was Isaac Asimov and Ray Bradbury. And so he was a complete disbeliever. Even when we lived in that horrifying house, he disbelieved through that entire 5 years, Tony. And he would always say, oh, you girls, you girls, you girls. So in the 90s, I produced and was in a paranormal documentary. And I brought it home and showed it to my folks at Christmas. Now my dad's, you know, in his late 70s, and he's watching and watching and watching. And a miraculous thing, Tony, he's seeing machines, right? His beloved robots are capturing spirit activity. So the film ends, and he kind of stops, and he looks at my mom, and he looks at me, and he says, you know, when we lived in that house, and I could see my mom starting this grand mal eye roll, right, because of all the times he told her she was crazy. When we lived in that house, there was this Franciscan-looking monk, and it used to come into my room every night at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it would sit on the bed and just stare at me, and then it would get up and just walk through the wall and go. But I didn't think it was paranormal. And, you know, my mom, Tony, is like, what? She's like freaking, what is this? How did he get there? Why was he from the 1400s? How did he get through the wall? How did he get in our house? But to him, because he was so rooted in his disbelief, right, that somehow he tuned that all out and it became not a paranormal thing. And that man had an extremely paranormal death. His last few days of life were all these different insane things that he saw while he was in between the worlds. So you never know, right?
Wow.
Sometimes it just takes one thing to turn a disbeliever into a believer. And for him, it was saying, well, my mom and I could be lying, and my friends could be lying, and her friends could be lying, but a tape recorder never lies. So there you go. That's all it took. So I think I think bringing the equipment into the investigating, whereas 100 years ago, it would have just been a psychic leading you through somewhere, right? But now there's machines.
Right.
And I think that has drawn a lot of people into the land of the believer, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the whole – I mean, even doing an EVP recording is a form of ITC or instrumental transcommunication. Because what instrumental transcommunication does is uses a third-party device, which you as the person asking the questions really don't have any control over. I mean, obviously, if you picked up the recorder and screamed into it or shook it, okay, yeah, you'd have an effect on it. But you don't have an effect on what is left on it. And that's the whole purpose of ITC, is that third-party device. And, yeah, I mean, it to me, I mean, that's why we are EVP specialists, because there's so much information that you can get from an EVP. You ask a question, which you're verbally just speaking out loud, and then this answer comes through on the digital recorder when you replay it. That, to me, is fascinating, not only because what was said is only part of the information you're getting. And what I mean by that is you can tell whether it's an adult or a child. You can tell whether it's male or female. You can tell whether there's an accent or a dialect or a completely different language. All that information comes on top of what they actually replied. So the amount of information that comes from it and the fact that you can't control the recorder to put it on there makes it the best evidence of anything as far as paranormal goes to us.
Yes. Yes. Right. Wonderful. And you're right. There is a very fine line between a tape recorder picking up an EVP and a person getting a telepathic or psychic message. The only difference is that one is coming through an organic person and one's coming through a machine.
Correct. And the other difference is that I can replay that recording for anyone. I cannot replay what the psychic picked up.
Right. So it's great for the machine people. Have you found, Tony, that the experience of investigating has made you more intuitive just from, you know, from using that muscle all the time when you're in a location.
Yes, not only more intuitive, but the connection to the spiritual side over the years has grown tremendously. And I owe most of this to my wife, because we'd go investigating and I would turn on a recorder and I'd just start asking questions. She would always stop me and say, no, don't ask questions yet. Let's just tell them who we are. Let's introduce ourselves. Let's tell them we're only here to communicate. We're not here to kick them out. We're not here to harm them. And so I followed her lead and did that over and over and over, and we still do that today. But what we found was is that because we started to introduce ourselves, we then found that when we would go to locations that we had never stepped foot in before, they would call us by name. Oh, it's the Rathmans. Oh, Tony and Cherie. You know, and that
right.
started years ago. But then we noticed that it moved, and we were able to walk into a location we've never stepped foot in. Matter of fact, we just came back 2 months ago. We did a four-mansion tour in the tri-state area. And, yeah, they were calling our names. We had never been in New York prior to that. So it's just it builds that trust. It builds that bond. And there's obviously some form of universal consciousness that's shared for them to know that we were telling spirits or entities in Phoenix, Arizona, and they were able to know our names in New York.
Right. It's like there's a ghostly internet, Tony.
Right. Exactly. That's a great analogy.
And they're posting for, beware of the Rathmans. They're coming.
Well, we've even heard that when we do personal home investigations. One we did about 2 years ago, I mean, they were literally, my wife had her a digital recorder and she said, my name's Cherie. We just want to communicate with you, find out why you're in this home. And she played, we played back the recording and they're like, oh no, the Rathmans, get them out. I mean, it was unbelievable.
That's hysterical. That's how you tell us negative spirit from a positive spirit, negative spirits, no bueno on the Rathmans.
Right, right.
If the spirit doesn't like the Rathmans, something's wrong. So what is it about Waverly
yep.
that intrigues you, Waverly Hills, and how have you avoided it thus far?
Well, we've obviously, we were going to go in 2020. COVID killed that. We had another one in 2019, but our own schedule killed it for us. We have definitely not avoided it, but they're extremely busy. I mean, if you don't, when they first put out their next year's appointments for when you can book it and get one right away, they fill up super fast. So that's been our biggest problem. We probably didn't have it as top of a priority as we need to be. But the reason I want to go there so bad is because of the constant activity that occurs there. You know, the place is huge. There's multiple different floors, which have different levels of activity based on what floor you're on and who you're interacting with. I don't know anybody who's gone there who hasn't said, oh my God, that was amazing. And I want, it's a bucket list item. So we want to make sure we get that in.
Wonderful. And how long feel you would need to investigate to cover that massive place? I've been there.
You would need much more than one night. You would need, I mean, to fully know what's going on in a location and the activities that are occurring, it's not something that's going to be done in a day or three or even a week. I mean, to truly know what's happening in the location, it takes years. We used to run the old Phelps Dodge Hospital in Ajo, Arizona, and we ran it for roughly about 4 years. It's sold now, which is just unfortunate, but a hotel company bought it. They're going to remodel it. But the activity in there, up until like the last couple days before we found out it sold, we were still catching new stuff. We were still finding out new spirits that were in there, new names. And then we caught some amazing shadow figures on a DVR that we left running all night that we didn't even know that that was happening. We had seen shadow figures, but we had never caught them on video. So that capture was just amazing. But to go into a location for one night or even a couple nights definitely is not enough to know truly what's going on. With the size of that place, it would take a long time to be able to fully say, here's what's going on here.
Yeah. I'll tell my Waverly story. My mom born in Louisville, Kentucky. So when she was young, her mother died and she was orphaned and in an orphanage in Louisville. And then when she was 12, adopted by my grandparents and grew up the rest of her childhood in upstate New York. So Louisville was always this mystical kind of place that we'd only been to once or twice, but that I knew it was her origins and didn't know much about it. So the first time I had the Booth brothers on my show, Philip and Christopher, I watched the Death Tunnel documentary that they made about Waverly. And three of the people in the documentary had my mother's birth name as a last name. And I was like,
what's
the story with this place? So I became instantly very intrigued by it. So in 2013, my friend Keith Age asked me to go out to Kentucky and help moderate some of the panels for Mid-South Paranormal in Louisville. And he gave me an extra couple of days in the hotel to wander around the city and try to find my family roots. So my plan was that last day, I was going to, because the conference ended on Sunday, Monday I was going to go to Waverly. 3 o'clock in the morning, I know it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up in the hotel and there's this black figure standing over me, like a tall, robed figure. And it says, you don't need to go to Waverly. You've had such a wonderful time, such a positive weekend. Why don't you just take tomorrow, get in the car, drive down the street, go to Irish for your roots? So I did, right? Who says no to the hooded figure? So the next day I got in the car. I drove down the street the hotel was on until I saw the street the figure mentioned. I turned on that street. I followed that street for about 15 minutes until I saw the sign that said Irish Town. And I was like, what the what? Got to Irish Town, stopped at the Irish bookstore, which was also the Louisville Historical Center, and walked in, took up a conversation with the owner. Turns out her mother-in-law and my grandmother worked at the American Standard Factory together during the Depression. I learned all this information about that location, how it was the first place in town, the first factory to hire Irish women, and how prideful she must have been to work there. Had I gone to Waverly, I would have missed all that stuff.
Right.
And then the following year, a crew was going to Columbus, Mississippi to film a documentary about the once a year they open up the southern homes and the families that have owned the homes for 300 years dress up in their 1800s attire and give you a tour. And the big mansion there is called Waverly. And I thought, well, what is the chance? And my mother had just died. And by a weird miracle on find a grave, I found my grandmother's grave. And I said, I'm going to go from Waverly to Waverly. So I did the thing in Mississippi, and then I rode, you know, straight up that freeway that takes you right to Louisville from Birmingham, Alabama. And I went and scattered my mom's ashes on my grandmother's grave, and I went to Waverly and struck up a conversation with the owner whose husband has my mother's last name. So
that
just
is incredible.
Talk about this idea. You know, I'm very big into that Stephen King Salem's Lot idea that places with a lot of activity will call you.
Yep.
And I think that Waverly, because if it hadn't been for Waverly, I wouldn't have had the Booth documentary. If it wasn't for the Booth, I wouldn't have known Keith Age. I wouldn't have been there in 2013. How everything just kind of called me back into really accepting in my soul that I'm a granddaughter of Louisville and being so proud to be part of that place and of that heritage. Interesting.
Sure.
It's like that thing, it just kept calling me. So yes, when I was there,
right,
was there activity? Did I see and feel stuff? Absolutely. But the whole, you know, 4-year journey of that place calling me so much as even something saying, now's not the time. Why don't you grab it the next time you're here? Just
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
You
I mean,
know,
those
are
the
there
moments
are no
that we live for.
Right. And there are no coincidences. Things happen for a reason.
No.
And, you know, you getting that information not to go to Waverly Hills, but to go track down, I mean, you would have missed out on all of that. And look what you all learned and the connections you made. And that was supposed to happen. And whatever, you know,
Absolutely.
Robed, hooded figure that gave you that information, it was productive information.
Yeah. And, you know, the interesting thing was when I was there, the owner said to me, do you have a pendulum? You should get a pendulum. And I had never had a pendulum. So I got my very first pendulum at Waverly. She picked up and handed me the rose quartz one, which was my mother's favorite stone. My mom was also a psychic medium. Rose quartz was my mother's
wow.
favorite stone. Of all the ones they had in there, she grabbed that one. And she said, well, you know, I don't tell anybody anything until I make sure it resonates with them. And this thing started spinning like that. You know that ride at the carnival where you're in the swings and you spin around in the circle?
Yep.
And now I probably have, you know, 20 pendulums. But that all started at Waverly, too. And that was really when I was starting to sort of come out as a psychic and talk more about who I was. That was a kind of a really important year for me. 2017 was the year I turned 50.
Wow.
And it was sort of a... It was a big year, you know, and that place was a big part of it. And I think that's why I asked you when was the last time you were at that haunted location that you started out in, because I think those locations become almost part of our spiritual friend network, and they do call to us to come back.
Oh, without a doubt. And let me tell you a story, because I turned 50 in 2020, and because that location was so dear to our heart and everything that we've captured. We have hundreds, I don't even know how many hundreds of video captures and photographs from that place. But my wife had gone down there and had booked the, what they call the ghost lounge. It's a bar area and tables. And she booked it to give me a 50th birthday party. But I didn't know any of this at the time. Well,
nice.
I had called her when she was actually there, and I said, "What are you doing in San Carlos?" She goes, "Oh, I got some errands to do." I said, "Are you running any recorders?" And she goes, "No, but I can." And I said, "Yeah, please do that. I would love to hear, you know, what kind of EVPs we get." So she brings this thing home, and I go through it to her, and I said, "You planning a birthday party?" And she looks at me, she goes, "What?" She goes, "Why would you ask that?" I said,
wow.
"Listen to this. The spirits had actually blown her secret, and that's how I found out. They were like, the Rathmans, they're coming back. Birthday party. It was unbelievable."
Wow. Are EVPs your favorite thing? They are mine.
They definitely are. Although I do like spirit box communication as well. And the only reason it has a little bit difference from an EVP is that it's real time. Meaning if you do an EVP session, you have to stop. You have to go back and listen because your answers are usually not heard with your own ears. They are only heard on the recording. Whereas a spirit box, you can get an answer real time, which can then help dictate what your next set of questions are.
Be kind of the same thing because you're also getting EVPs.
Correct. You're getting vocal responses from an intelligent consciousness. So, yeah, they work along the same similar lines.
I'm more into, like, if I would take that over a full body apparition going woo and chasing me down a hall, I'd be like, but wait, say something.
Right.
Maybe because I'm a radio
right.
person.
When you can...
I want to know what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what's going on, what they think of humans being there, living humans, you know?
Right. Well, and that's the great thing. That's the other aspect to hearing either an EVP or a spirit box response is that sometimes there's even emotion in it. You can tell if they're happy, if they're sad, if they're angry, if they're being mean. Just the amount of information that comes from it can't be matched by any other method or device out there, and that's why we love it.
I agree. So let's totally turn the tables into something, a different direction, and talk about the film we were a part of this summer. I know we can't share details and things, but how long have you been interested in the world of UFOs and off-worlders and extraterrestrials? How did you get thrown to that mix?
Well, a lot of that has to do with Andrea. I do produce her show called A World Awakening. And some of the extraterrestrial stuff. Now, I had some sightings. I live here in Phoenix, Arizona. And, of course, it's very well known for having all sorts of strange activity in the sky. But it was what was really the eye opener for me was having her talk about it, have her, I mean, most of the shows that we do either deal with, you know, spiritual or extraterrestrial or sometimes both. But when she started explaining to me, I think what really got me hooked was when we were talking about her old farmhouse. And everyone knows the farmhouse is known for the Conjuring movie and because it was the real-life event that happened to the Perrin family. But when she started telling me that it wasn't just spirits or entities that they were seeing and that UFO activity had occurred at about the same time as when the paranormal started, and I use paranormal loosely, meaning entities, spirits, because it's all paranormal at this. Then when I started making those connections and then took a look at other places like Skinwalker Ranch or Blind Frog Ranch, they all have those same connections where there's a lot more going on. And then I remember having a conversation with Andrea about the fact that, you know, who do you know who you're talking to when you're doing Spirit Box? Is it entities? Is it extraterrestrial? Is it multidimensional creatures? And of course, I mean, this stuff had all crossed my mind before, but I think it was really that connection with Andrea that really expanded my thought process to say, okay, there is a lot more going on here than, you know, any scientific method can explain today. And the thing about the scientific method is that it is focused in the 3D world we live in here and doesn't exceed that because it can't. But anything in the paranormal does exceed that. You know, hundreds of years ago, a lunar eclipse was considered paranormal. Well, it's not today. Science said, okay, here's what's happening. Well, hopefully science will be able to catch up to what researchers have been noticing in the paranormal and the extraterrestrial world, and we'll be able to get some answers.
Absolutely. My whole life I have believed that spirituality and science are two sides of the same coin. We're just not evolved enough yet to figure it all out. But that's
perfectly said. Perfectly said.
And I think you're right. I mean, I was in what was supposed to be an off-worlder communication seance once in the Hollywood Hills. And this thing, it landed. And it was not a craft. It was a being. It landed on the roof, and it shook the house. And its messages were so, I think it was angelic. I don't think it was an off-worlder. I know some people believe that's the same thing. I don't, but I love anybody's opinions, no matter what they are. This thing, its whole attitude was like, look, people, and it wasn't playing, Tony. You've messed up the world. You've messed up the earth. You've messed up each other. There is too much hate, too much anger, too much fear, too much bigotry. Don't make us come back there because we will, and you're not going to like it if we do. And I was walking to the car that night thinking, are they going to come back and smote us all like Old Testament style? So you never know what you're going to get. You know, sometimes you think you're going to get one thing, and you wind up getting something else. And that's the thing about when you punch a hole in the veil, right? You never know what's going to come through, which is why we need to be so careful when we use Ghost Box or the Ouija board or whatever it is that we're using. We need to be so careful because we don't know what we're getting when we go into that world. I always say it's like, you know, it's like if you go into a bar at 2 o'clock in the morning naked and say, who wants to have sex with me? You're going to get takers, but you might not like who you get. And that's kind of what it's like if you're blindly doing a Ouija board. You know, you don't know what spiritual hitchhikers and weirdos are out there waiting to kind of attach themselves to you, and you have to be so careful. Have you ever had a situation where you or someone from your team picked up some kind of an attachment during an investigation?
Yeah, actually it's happened to me. And it was during our early years. We were in the underground tunnels in the La Posada Hotel in Winslow, Arizona. And my wife told the entities that they could use my energy, which, of course, has never happened since because it didn't go well. I had gotten an attachment. It literally was almost debilitating. I mean, we always do protection prayers when we finish investigating and say it. So I remember my wife saying, I'll say a couple of words, just repeat them. I couldn't do it. It was messing with my thoughts. It was messing with my emotions. It was restricting me from literally just repeating the prayer she was trying. And this went on for a couple of days until we finally got a hold of some individuals that could help us out and got it taken away. But it was a scary experience. And, you know, a lot of people think that there are no dangers in this. And I can tell you without a doubt, they are wrong. There are very vivid dangers, and you have to protect yourself. You have to be aware of what can happen, at least as far as what we're aware that can happen. I mean, we've probably touched 2% of what they can do. So it's a dangerous, and you've got to be on guard, no doubt about it.
And protection prayers are so important.
Yes.
What prayers do you do?
The St. Michael's one is the one we use the most just because we know it by heart and it's effective and it does work. And, you know, a lot of people always say, well, you know, you're bringing religion into it. Well, you know, what you feel is going to change the situation. It's your trust in that. And if your trust is in religious prayers, then use it because it will work.
Absolutely. Whatever you feel is working. I mean, I wear charms around my neck always. They always hang right over my solar plexus. It's very hard to find a necklace this length. They're all gold, solid gold, and they all have some kind of significance. They were given to me by somebody who loved me, or I purchased them at a very important time. As a matter of fact, my mom always wanted a Celtic cross, and when I was in that shop in Louisville that I told you about in 2013, I purchased a small gold one for my totem necklace and a big silver one for her, because by then she had become very infatuated with big, chunky silver jewelry, as she called it. And she was wearing that right up until the day she died, and now I have it, her silver one. When I went back there, after she passed, when I went in 2017 to scatter her ashes, and I bought an Irish triquetra there, because, you know, triquetras symbolize your phases of life. So for women, it's maiden, mother, crone. And I embarrassingly must say that I believe 50 is crone. So because it was literally the day after my 50th birthday, and also it kind of reminds me of her. There's a big triquetra with a little one on the inside, and it reminds me of her and me. So those things, I believe, help to keep the nasty spirits away, because those are things that I believe in. But then I also, let me tell you something, I go to a haunted place, I got a crystal in my pocket or 10, and I'm saying white light protection prayers, and I don't mess around, because I grew up in an ugly, active house, and I don't want that for me or anybody else in the future. You know?
Sure. Yeah, no, and that's important. My wife's similar to you. She's got crystals. She's got, you know, pendants. She's got, I'm more of, you know, I've got some tokens. I got St. Michael's tokens. I've got rings with crosses on them. I've got a big cross that goes around my neck on a chain. But those are the items for me that work. And, it's like you said, it's that faith in them that, gives them their power.
Totally agree. So had you been to Joshua Tree before, And what did you think of the energy there?
It was huge.
My first time too.
It was just, cool. It was just such a fantastic experience because, like I said, I know we can't go into detail because it hasn't been released yet, but, you know, it crossed all those boundaries that we were talking about from spirits to elementals to extraterrestrials. You know, we got to do some cool experiments with different types of equipment we had brought and some really neat effects. And there were such a great variety of people there that covered, you know, such a huge aspect of every portion of the paranormal, which just made it fascinating. And, you know, I wish it would have been, you know, a week or 2 weeks long rather than a couple of days, but it was an amazing experience. And can't wait to see how that comes out.
I agree. I can't wait to go back there and teach. I want to go back and do like a weekend retreat there. Teach classes during the day and then at night do a seance one night and maybe a ufology thing the next night. I just think I was driving back from Joshua Tree down when you drive back down into Palm Springs thinking to myself, Joshua Tree is my Sedona. And no offense to Sedona. I love my Sedona. I have been there a couple of times and had great experiences. But when people talk about Sedona and they get a little like misty-eyed and their eyes kind of roll up in their head, I don't get that in Sedona, but man, I did in Joshua Tree. And it was everything I could do not to drive back here, sell everything I own, go there, buy a compound, and become a preacher. I was like, I'm already a preacher. But I mean, you know what I mean? Start a religion
right.
in Joshua Tree.
The energy,
because,
the energy there was very strong. And although Sedona has it, one of the things that as we've watched Sedona change over the last 20, 30 years, it's become very commercialized and it kind of lost some of its, not that it lost its energy, but it lost its overall effect of what it used to be when you went in. And that's had a little bit of effect on it, but still a great place. But Joshua Tree was unique because it's much more remote. You've got open wilderness, which I think also builds that energy. There are no city lights to affect stargazing or looking for, you know, UFOs. And the energy level flowed through on every aspect, both spiritual, paranormal, and everything in between. So I agree. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's super, super, super special. It kind of reminded me, and there's kind of a grunginess to it that I actually liked. It's like if Palm Springs is where the family lives, Joshua Tree is like your weird cousin that lives in the back house. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, it's just like
right,
you,
but there was something
you drive
very
further into the
I'm sorry, but there was something very fascinating about that. That was a draw to the place.
Yeah, and I got some great crystals there. I was amazed that in a tiny place like that, there were four or five really great crystal / physical shops. I didn't think I'd be hard-pressed to find one because it was so small between Joshua Tree and Yucca. But there was so much of it and just gorgeous crystals. And I just love the Joshua Trees themselves. I mean, I know I saw the little seeds at the historical society where you could grow your own. And I thought, oh my God, if I live there, I would literally line my front yard with them and they would just be everywhere. I just want to hug them when I see them. As a matter of fact, driving to Vegas was the first time I ever saw them because I didn't grow up here. We moved here when I was 13 and driving out to Vegas, I want to stop along the 15 and just hug everyone I see. So to have them growing, I mean, when I got out to get into the hotel at Joshua Tree, I was like, people have them growing in their yards. And I was fascinated because I've only seen them in the Mojave National Forest. I was not aware that you could have one in your yard. And I thought, oh my God, what if you had one? Yeah. I think there's I understand now why the Native Americans thought that those trees were so touched and believed that at night they danced and changed positions because
right.
And man, there's a lot of interdimensional activity up there.
Oh yes. yes, that could be felt on every level. And, you know, just an experience. Like I said, first time we had been there. Now, I've gone through through the park. Every time we go to California and stuff, we go right through it. But the areas that we were in were extra special because, you know, it was remote. And like I said, just stepping out of the car, you could feel the energy. And, you know, I don't know if it was so elevated because of just the area or the fact of the amazing people we had there, but it was an experience I'll never forget.
It's fantastic. So tell me, for you as a seasoned investigator, Tony, how much of what you see do you think is spirits of past humans or animals, living things on the earth? How much of it is earth spirits or elementals? How much of it is interdimensional activity? Let's say we're going to lump the off-worlders in with the interdimensionals at this point, because I think the idea that you walk in a place and everything you see are human beings lived on the earth and died, I think the community has grown so far beyond that. So how do you feel about that?
Well, from my own personal experiences over the last 12 years of doing this, I'd say it's probably, you know, if you consider it just human spirits and others, 50-50. If you break it down to human spirits, elementals, multidimensional, extraterrestrial, then it's probably 25, 25, 25, 25. It's like fishing. You throw that line out there, you never know what's going to bite. And we as investigators don't have the ability to determine exactly who we're communicating with. All we know is that we're speaking with our own voice, but yet getting answers either through a digital recorder or a spirit box that answers the question we ask with both timing and in a relatively short time frame. So we're dealing with consciousness. And for me, it is that consciousness that creates everything we call paranormal today. I mean, how many times have you heard people who have had extraterrestrial encounters who say, he was speaking to me or she was speaking to me, but their mouth never moved, but yet I could hear them? Well, that's no different than if it's a human spirit that's communicating through consciousness. It's electromagnetic. It's brainwave activity. It's the same reason why you can ask a question on an EVP and have the answer show up before you even finish asking the question out loud, because they're not getting it from our voice. They're getting it from brainwaves or EMF or a different way than our actual human speech.
Completely agree. Yeah. And I think sometimes they know we're coming. I interviewed a demonologist once who I loved. And I said to her, do they know you're coming? Because spirits will know, right, if you're coming back to a house that's haunted. They know. They beckon you back. So demonic activity is supposed to be so intelligent, right? So a demonologist is coming to bust you. Don't you know they're coming? And she said, oh, my God, you have no idea how many flat tires, you know, dead starters, engine won't start, and there's
right.
No reason for it. Happen when I'm on my way to these things. So
yep.
I believe that
they know,
only when
they
you're
know.
Incarnate, right, only when you're incarnate do you have this limited consciousness. As soon as you pass over into the spirit world, you develop that 360 consciousness. And
yes.
Just like how spirits can follow their loved ones everywhere. You know, a lot of people think the spirits are just at the cemetery. They're very rarely at the cemetery. Where they are is they're in your house. They're in your car. They're in your bed. They're at school with you. They're at work with you. And they always know where you're going to be, because at any moment, if they decide to visit you, they can just tap into where you're going to be and show up.
Yep.
So,
yep, and we've experienced that.
You know what I mean? Right.
Yep.
They know when you're coming.
They sure do.
Obviously, that attachment was hard to get rid of, right? I mean, But do you have spirits that you actively communicate with that you know will be in locations when you go, and you've talked to that
yes.
specific spirit in return visits?
When we ran the old Phelps Dodge Hospital, we ran into the spirit named Michael, and he flat out gave us his name. Clear EVP. I mean, you cannot miss what he's saying. He says, "I am Michael." Well, we started communicating with Michael at the hospital over the years we ran it. Well, when we went to the Diplomat Hotel in Baguio City, Philippines, we were recording. We had EVPs in English, Tagalog, Japanese, and Latin. And then this voice showed up when my wife asked, you know, spirits, we're just here to communicate. We're not here to hurt you. Michael's voice showed up and said, "I can help with that." And we're thinking instantly when we heard it, I'm like, "That's Michael." And my wife is like, "That is Michael." So all the way to the other side of the world, he showed up because we were investigating.
Wow. And do some of these spirits visit you outside of the locations? Have they ever come to visit you in your home?
Oh, yes. Yep, we've been experiencing that for years. But because we also do EVP and Spirit Box sessions weekly in our home, we've kind of gotten used to it.
Wow.
Yep.
You're a burly human being. I don't know that I'm ready for that. I always say I love ghosts, but I don't want yours. I don't want them in my home. So the fact that you do that is amazing.
You know, it's caused some issues.
It has caused issues in the past. How do you ward and protect the house for that?
Well, we've been lucky up to this point that only twice have we had something that was really causing problems. And then, again, we pulled in additional friends to clean the house, bless it. Now, we know how to do that, but because it was our house, we wanted somebody else doing it, and they did have to do that to straighten things out. But we've been lucky to the point where the ones that are here, and they're here all the time, they come and go as they please, they haven't caused any real trouble. The last instance was our daughter, and she was 18 at the time, so we're not talking young, but she woke up 2 or 3 in the morning and she heard somebody talking, and then she saw a shadow figure standing at the end of her bed. And so we literally just said, "Okay, who's here? If you want to talk to us, you talk to Cherie or I. You do not mess with the kids," although she was 18 at the time, so technically an adult. But they actually replied, and it was so curious because they said, "Which room is hers?" And then another one answered across from Nico, which is her brother. So they pinpointed the room, and then they told us who was in there. And then his voice showed up on the spirit box, and he apologized. And that ended it. We, for her anyway, cut out all the interaction. She had none since then. And that was, well, she's 22 now, so that was, what, 5 years ago?
Right. And is that where you draw the line, spirits of being around your child?
Well, only because she was frightened. And
yeah.
I won't let – and so the bottom line was, you want to speak or you want to make your presence known only to Cherie or I, no one else.
Mm. Right.
And we've seen crazy stuff. We had come home from an investigation. And it was probably 2:30 in the morning, and Cherie and I were sitting on our bed, and we were reviewing evidence. And we had this white figure literally float right over the bed, and we both were reviewing. She was listening to audio, and I was looking at video, or vice versa, I can't remember. But you could watch both of our heads just follow this thing across. And it was... You know, that was one of probably 100 different examples I have, but they do come. They do come to visit. But luckily, the majority of them don't cause any problems.
That's fantastic. You are amazing. We are completely out of time. Please come and do this again and maybe bring Cherie. Would she do that? Will she talk on the radio?
Absolutely, she will. No doubt about it. But thank you. This was just a fantastic conversation, and absolutely loved it. So thank you.
My pleasure. Where can people find you online?
They can find us at www.entityvoices.com. They can find us on Facebook, either under Entity Voices or just under Tony Rathman. You can find us on YouTube if you want to see some of the captures that we have under Entity Voices Paranormal Investigations.
Awesome. Thank you, my friend, for being here. Everybody, the wonderful Tony Rathman. If you missed that information, find me at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. We're here every Wednesday, 6 o'clock Pacific time, right here at LiveParanormal.com, iHeartRadio.com. We're also at HauntedPlayground.com, and I'm at SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. You can learn more about my spiritual practice and more about all the spiritual services that I offer. Till I see you next time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, raise your vibration, stay spooky, and make sure you tell somebody about that Loch Ness monster in your pool, because you got to get a better filter if you're going to have that thing. I'll see you next time. I love you all. Thank you for being here.